Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too. Hello, Fried fam! In the beginning of 2024, end of 2023, in the Facebook group, I asked you what you needed from the podcast, and the theme of burnout plus other addiction type things. So a lot of you were saying that you consider burnout an addiction to work. And then we were talking about there was some substance abuse. There was some alcoholism mentioned. This came up a lot. So I think we got about 112 answers to that question. And in 112 answers, about 30 of them were about some form of addiction and or sobriety. So I went through my guest list, and I am so thrilled to bring to you a conversation with Colleen Cashman, who is a certified master life and recovery coach using cutting-edge strategies in nervous system regulation. You know we love that. Growth mindset. We love that too. Positive psychology. Amen. And self-directed neuroplasticity. Okay, can you see we belong together? To help women reconnect with a higher sense of purpose so they can feel passionate and powerful again. Colleen helps women bypass the stigma and the drama that society associates with sobriety by focusing on what's really important, our relationship with ourselves. Through her own experience with alcoholism, Colleen founded Recover with Colleen after realizing that being quote-unquote sober is not a good goal. Pursuing happiness instead of sobriety is the only way to reclaim your power. Woo! Let's just start off with some goosebumps. Colleen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love being here and I love sharing this story of hope because there's so much misinformation about addiction and alcoholism or whatever word we can get into that. But there's such a good other side and it's just not what we think. You know, we have so many limiting beliefs and misunderstandings about the mind and the body and the nervous system. So I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Every Fried episode starts out with the guest's story. And I sort of take a step back and leave space for you to tell your story of burnout, recovery, sobriety, kind of how that all mashes together. And I will use that story and some quotes I found on your website to dig a little bit deeper into some things that maybe other people haven't asked you to dig deeper into. I tend to pick up on every time I finish an interview, somebody says, no one's ever asked me that before. So let's prep for that. And I'm going to take a seat back and leave you in center stage.
Wonderful. So I would say that my recovery began typically with the day I decided to, air quotes around the words, quit drinking. I will be full disclosure. I now no longer identify as a woman with any relationship with alcohol. I drink like a normal person. It's not a thing. I have given up that story that I used to have an alcohol addiction and that I need to modify my behavior and not trust myself. But, you know, with recovery of anything, basically you're living in the problem or you're recovering from it. And I think every person, every soul on this planet, like we all get to that point in our lives where we get to turn right or keep going on the path that we're on. And for me, that was the day that I woke up and said, I can't keep doing this. Like, I don't know what I want, but it's not this. It was in the middle of COVID lockdowns 2020, and I had been a heavy daily drinker for many, many years. I raised my children. I taught hot yoga. I taught aerobics. I was a health coach. I was all the things. I volunteered. I worked. I was a good ex-wife and a good new wife and everything to all the people. So you can see, you know, burnout coming there because I was very perfectionistic about my life. And I had this idea that I was getting away with my drinking. And I had this idea that I needed it and that I couldn't live without it. And so even though I knew that I was drinking too much, I thought I was getting away with it because I was checking all the boxes. What more do you want from me? Like, get off my back. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to what the real problem was, which was that I didn't have a relationship with myself because as a person, I knew I was suffering and I was ignoring the signs and symptoms because I was more concerned with what was going on around me and managing other people's opinions than I was about loving and caring for myself. So my day one was I was out for a run, running off my hangover. And as you know, with nervous system, sometimes your body just takes over and it's not always a bad thing. So I had an impulse that day. My hand did not talk to me about it, grabbed my phone on my run and dialed the AA hotline. Because as a drinker in this culture, we believe that you are either a normal drinker or you are an alcoholic. And so those of us who are normal drinkers and find ourselves in the weeds don't say anything because we have shame. We think we have to hide the fact that we've gotten addicted to something where we're all addicted to all the things, phones, coffee, sugar, work, all of the things. But with alcohol, it means something about who we are. It's not something that like, oh, well, you just, you know, do this or that. So I had hit it and finally I couldn't do that anymore. And I called AA because I thought that was the only option. You either continue to struggle with the drinking or you admit you're an alcoholic. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go directly to AA, get a sponsor, pick up the big book and start apologizing to everybody around you while they're holding drinks for everything you've ever said and done. But when you get to that point, you're like, I'll say whatever the hell you want me to say. Hi, my name is Colleen and I'm an alcoholic. Like, whatever, let's get this party going. And what happened over the course of the next year was I became a perfect sober person. So I was still playing the alcohol game. My life revolved around the topic of alcohol, but I had just switched teams. Now I'm team sober and I start a health coaching business focused on sobriety, right? And so I continued to do that. And of course, Kate, I felt so much better. I mean, of course, but it was about a year and a half into that journey where now I'm in recovery from recovery because I allowed myself to be indoctrinated by this idea that I'm an alcoholic. And they coach you, they teach you to reframe the whole narrative of your life from this place that there's something wrong with your brain, something that can't be fixed. You know, you can't unpickle your cucumber and once an addict, always an addict. And I adopted that and I believed it. And one day I was sitting at my parents' house and my dad offered my brother, who's 47 at the time, a glass of wine. And he said, no, I'm not drinking right now. And my little brain, I was like, oh, I'm the sober representative of the family at this time. And I was like, ooh, did you get a DUI? Did Molly say she's going to divorce you? And he looked at me and he said, saying no to a glass of wine doesn't mean you have a problem with alcohol. Actually, it's just the opposite, dumbass. And there I am. And like, it was like there was a glitch in the matrix. All of a sudden I realized I was living in this story and I could actually drop the story. So that began where I started digging into the science of addiction and found out that it's the exact opposite. You actually can, through self-directed neuroplasticity and nervous system regulation, people who have overcome an alcohol addiction are better able to regulate themselves within 6 to 12 months. So this idea that you have one drink and you're going to be living in a van down by the river, drinking mouthwash out of a paper bag just isn't true, but it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's what I do now is I am a coach working with women who find themselves in the weeds with alcohol. And I help them understand that what really needs to happen is that connection with yourself. You need to learn how to operate your nervous system, set boundaries, all the things you talk about on this podcast. It's not about the alcohol. And that's the name of my podcast now. It's not about the alcohol.
One of the things that you said is something that also came up in your book. And you said that you went from being the perfectionist who was holding it all together to the perfectionist sober person. And at some point you also became a perfectionist vegan.
Oh, yes.
Right. So there was a lot of, throughout the years, there was, here, I'll just put on this persona and then everything will be okay. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. How did that all connect together with the idea of like this glitch in the matrix when your brother said something? Was that at the same time? Were you already a vegan then? Was that a full glitch? Did that next glitch happen later? Because you were just like trading like one persona for the next, for the next, for the next. When did you stop trading the personas?
So part of my sobriety was I also decided, wait for it, to get off all medications and to be completely sober in all ways. Now, at this time, I hit a wall physically. Okay. So I had been a strict vegan for almost 12 years at that point. And I'm also a very good intermittent faster. I mean, you would have said it's anorexic, but these days we call it intermittent fasting. So let's just relanguage all of that. But, you know, I had all these rules I was living by. And my brain chemistry just hit a wall. And, you know, that is what addiction actually is when you're using a substance that spikes your dopamine and then drops it below normal. And then over time, your baseline levels of dopamine go down and down. So even though I had quit drinking and I was feeling so much better, I still had no motivation. I still dealt with anxiety and depression, and I just didn't feel good because my dopamine, which is, of course, is also tied to the story we tell ourselves, not just the foods we eat and substances we use. And so I was constantly chasing this bar. My dopamine was wired that I have to get or to do in order to feel better. And of course, if you've ever printed a transcript out of your brain, your opinion changes every 5 minutes. So we're jerking ourselves around through life with ever-changing opinions, completely ignoring the experience. You know, now I know that truth is all of it, none of it. Yesterday's truth is tomorrow's bullshit. And so the goal is to feel what's going on in your body and to respond to your own needs in real time and then adjust to the consequences, yet more or less. So I had been a strict vegan, then I go completely sober, and then I wake up with the worst case of mental health disorder ever, a year and a half, and I'm completely perfect. I mean, read the paper. Come on, you guys, I'm doing it all right. And my doctor's like, I think we should put you in the hospital for depression. And I'm like, but I can't take the drugs and I can't eat the food. And like, what am I going to do there?
My background before I did this stuff was as an acupuncturist. So I spent almost 15 years seeing patients. And in the world of alternative healing, there's a lot of this. No medicines or no, like, do everything clean. Orthorexia comes up a lot, right? There's all these different ways of almost being self-righteous with how right you're doing life, but then feeling like shit in the background. So something that you touched on and something that you touch on a lot sort of on your website, in your book, is this idea of spending enough time with yourself to be able to react accordingly, according to your own needs, instead of according to some outside list of things. So this is a huge piece of, we talk about this a lot here at Fried, because I don't have a coaching program. I have a, when you sign up to coach with me, we do customized everything because I have no idea what you are showing up with. And I refuse to take a burnt out person and put them through a very structured, like, if you follow all of these rules, you will be okay. No, some people start with changing their nightstand and other people start with loving themselves through a different way. Like who knows? I don't know what I'm going to tell you to do. Right. I can't tell you that ahead of time. And so, while I'm hearing you say that now, what I'm thinking about is some coaching sometimes allows for that mirroring relationship where somebody does that for us for a minute while we learn to do it for ourselves.
Yeah.
right? We're mirroring. We're just saying, hey, this is what I see. Hey, this is what's going on. Hey, what do you think about this? Hey, let's be here and now. But the word that you use for this, the term that you use for this is emotional sobriety.
Yes.
Is right. And you write on your website that emotional sobriety is when you deal with life as is instead of how you think it should be. Can we talk about emotional sobriety probably for a long time?
Yeah, pull up a chair. Because emotional sobriety is when you make the turn where you understand that your emotions are caused by the thoughts in your head, the story that you're telling yourself. So when you separate fact from fiction, there's fact, neutral, admissible in a court of law. Everybody's going to agree with that. Your dog can see it, feel it, touch it, sniff it. Everything else is the story you're telling yourself about those facts. And so emotional sobriety is when you when you're able to separate the difference. We all live with emotions and we all live in story. The problem is when we don't understand that we're telling ourselves a story and that there's another perspective, there's another truth. Like I define mental health in three ways. One, when the story in your head allows you to get what you want in life, so it's working for you. When your daily habits are sustainable long-term, you can keep doing them, rinse and repeating, and you get healthy and you're good. And then also that you're able to maintain balance and harmony through all areas of your life. And so for me, understanding emotional sobriety is the ability to see that you think and your thoughts change constantly. Like I said, yesterday's truth is tomorrow's bullshit. And you have to be able to acknowledge the whole truth. I just did a call with a gal and she was talking about everything she has to do, the typical overworked, burned out mother. She has to do all this stuff for her boys and the doctor's appointments and the sports and then her husband and the bills and the taxes. And I said, the first thing we need to do here is acknowledge that you actually have a choice. You can walk out that door and never come back. And until you acknowledge that as a choice, you're not living in a choice. And I believe that when we realize that everything we do is actually a choice, now we can choose from a place of power. I don't have to do this. I can, but I don't have to.
And there's so a lot of rules we have there.
Right. Emotional sobriety then is to realize that your emotions of I can't or anxiousness or resistance, it's all just the story you're telling yourself in your head that you have to or you can't or you should. This should be this. Or the overthinker who gets stuck in their head, they don't actually ever do anything because they're stuck in all the what ifs, what if this, what if that. And I help people or I encourage people to come into the what is. Let's deal with the what is.
Yeah.
And then that's a place of power. And it's not all this hypothetical regret and catastrophizing and all of that. So emotion is basically when you are no longer intoxicated by your own bullshit. That's what emotional sobriety is.
Oh, you're going to have to pause and go back about 15 seconds. You're going to have to pause that little like reverse button on the podcast listener and listen to that one sentence again. Emotional sobriety is when you are no longer intoxicated by your own bullshit. Fried fam, I tell you in nearly every episode that step one of your burnout recovery is blood work. And I know that a lot of you avoid it because it's a pain and because your doctor has told you that everything is quote unquote fine. And they refuse to test all the things that you think you need. What if I told you that you could test what you want, when you want, from your home with just a couple of drops of blood? SciFox Health allows you to do just that. You can buy tests as one-offs or join a membership. Either way, you can test and track your results to help you make decisions about your burnout recovery journey. Get 10% off any membership, subscription, or one-time test kit right now. Go to scifoxhealth.com/fried for your discount. That's scifoxhealth.com/fried. Thank you. this is something that comes up a lot. We do free office hours for Fried. And a question that I'm constantly asking, people get two sentences into their story. I'm like, wait, wait, wait. That first sentence that you just said, is that actually true? That's... Are we actually dealing in fact here, or are we dealing in the whole shebang? Like, you've made this overarching theme and this big statement that you have decided now applies to every area of your life all the time and always. And I can prove to you probably within 13 seconds that it's not true, but you're still saying it. So why are we saying it, and what's going on here? And that's such a powerful thing to experience. But I want to talk about choice a little more. Something that we've talked about quite a bit on the podcast is sort of being stuck in a victim mindset, which I don't think is anybody's fault. I think we're taught that. I think we do it for good reason. This is not a judgment. This is it just... Being in a victim mindset, for those of you who haven't heard it before or are new around here, means that you are looking at your life as if your life is happening to you. You have no control or influence over it, and you don't actually have any of these choices. And then you hear somebody like Colleen come on and say, you have choices. And what you do to prove to yourself that you don't have the same choices as Colleen is you say, she is wealthier than I am. She has more support than I do. She is different. She wasn't raised like I was. She's a different color than I am. She's heterosexual and I'm not. And this, you create a list of reasons why in your life, it's not actually a choice. But I want you to go back first to think about what Colleen said and say, you could actually walk out on your family today. Is that what you want to do? Do you want to deal with the consequences of that? Is that probably not, but it is actually a choice. You could literally walk away. You would feel guilty. You might get arrested. There will be consequences for the action, but you could still do it. So can we talk a little bit about the victim mindset, the fact that there actually is a choice in front of us, and this idea of growth mindset on the other side? I know that was like a whole lot of stuff all at once, but I saw you taking notes and I think you're on it.
Yeah. So the growth mindset is where you want to go, because if you start with the idea, and all of our ideas that we're exchanging, also all bullshit.
Like, of course,
we're just making stuff up, right? So these are frameworks. These are tools, and you are free to believe it. You are free to believe it for 5 minutes and try it on and experiment and then discard it. But the bottom line is that you do have the ability in your head to, if you see things as a choice, that gives you then that helps you get to the real reason of what's really causing you the problem. You know, I run a program where I have women in there trying to quit drinking. And in the same call, we have women who are reintroducing alcohol after they're recovering from sobriety. And we're doing that. And I'm like, my program is for people who are ready to understand that if she triggers you to drink, that's on you. This idea that I can't drink, well, do you have a driver's license and $20? Because you can drink. So this whole story of I can't perpetuates the victim mindset, because now I can't drink and you're making me uncomfortable, or I can't drink so I can't go on the vacation with everybody else. Like, there's no power in the word I can't. And so it takes practice and skill. And I think that's part of the growth mindset. I can see how my own mindset has changed so much. And it's a skill, you know, you don't wake up overnight. But when you start from a place of power and realize that anything is possible, that's the definition of a growth mindset, right? When you get stuck on a problem, then you try harder. You ask for help. You double down. You adjust your timeline of how long this is going to take.
But or your expectations of what it should look like when you're on the other side.
Right. You congratulate yourself for the actions and the intention. You know, Okay, I made 5 calls. It doesn't matter if I made 5 sales, you know, whatever. And so moving and understanding the power of the growth mindset, it removes your limitations. And then now you're standing in your power. How does it feel to say no to a drink, let's say, because I don't want it? I promised Colleen that we're working out in the morning. I have a choice here. Then it just changes everything when you stand in your power. I don't know if I answered your question.
I think you did. And I want to stay here for a moment because I also think that staying in your power and recognizing that there's a choice, the tricky part of this, I believe, for those of us that have a tendency toward burnout, is that we already feel hyper responsible. And this is another sort of space of responsibility. And we're not always trying to be all that, like we're trying to get away from hyper responsibility as a trauma response, but we need to be responsible for our own lives. And I know how I break apart those two things, but how do you break apart those two things?
Well, there's the two polars for me, the extremes here between the victim mindset. What's the opposite of the victim mindset? It's where you are looking forward and realizing I have to cause my own happiness. My actions in this moment are seeding for the future, not cleaning up last night's mess or taking responsibility for everybody else's mess and then wondering why I'm not getting anywhere. And so we tell ourselves a story that we have to take care of other people. But if you get really deep underneath that, we're actually avoiding the actions that we want to do or that we need to do. We're actually avoiding what we're resisting. And often when I deal with people who have kids, my question is, are you doing that to make them feel better or you feel better because you don't want to see them suffer? You don't want to see them in the consequence of their life. And so it's just this codependent dance where the victim mindset is really just you avoiding your own power. You're avoiding your own power.
Somebody, a friend of mine posted something recently on Facebook, and I almost wrote to her and asked her if I could repost it and say why I disagreed with it on every level. I didn't. But the statement was, there was a meme about how middle-class people like tell their children, like, I'm taking everything when I die. Don't expect any money. Don't expect anything. And I laughed because my father always says this, like, I'm spending everything before I die. Don't expect there to be anything, which is fine with me. Like, go live your life, dude. And wealthy people are creating generational wealth and are leaving things behind and blah, blah, blah. And the statement above it was, nothing in capital letters that I do on a daily basis is for myself. Nothing. And I was like, oh. That's awful. Like so you have officially martyred yourself. You don't feel good in your day-to-day life, but you do feel self-righteous and you do think you're protecting your children from things, which they'll have to live through their own shit anyway.
Yeah.
And so we get stuck in this, like, my job as a parent is to make my children's lives better than mine. Sort of idea.
Yeah. On this side of that, so I've raised 4 kids and 3 stepkids, and I can tell you privilege, and I say this from a place of privilege, so let's just get that out of the way. Privilege can be a disability too, because they don't have the tools or the skills. You know, growing up, having everything handed to you, the best thing I've ever done for my kids is let them fail. The day I quit drinking and I started taking responsibility for my own needs, I became a role model for what that looks like and for setting boundaries and not letting other people's emotions dictate what I'm going to do and where my focus is. What better gift can we give our kids than to teach them how to set a goal and stay focused on it and not get distracted by all the drama and all the stories and everybody's reasons and everything? Like, set your pace and keep going. And so as a mother, I have learned the hard way that living for my children didn't go well. You know, they're in their mid-20s now and we're walking a lot of stuff back. We have failure to launch in a couple of areas. And so we don't have to make our kids better. I think the truth underneath that story is we've lost ourselves in our kids. it's been easier to just do the things for everybody else because we can hold our breath longer. And oh, look, here's a bottle of wine. So I'll just exchange my needs for some drink tickets and shut the hell up. Like, I can do that. Just give me another drink. And then that's actually how we live is the best gift to our children, because that's what I taught my children to do, to put up with crap in exchange for expensive wine. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's not a gift.
Yeah. And this is something that one of the exercises that we do when I'm teaching people how to be burnout coaches is I have them all write a eulogy for themselves. And say, and this is part of the group coaching program too, like write a eulogy for yourself, read some before you start. But if I, when I die, because we all know it's going to happen, when I die, if I read a eulogy somewhere that talks about how much I sacrifice for other people, I will have truly felt like I fucked up. Yes, exactly. Like puke face emoji, insert pukey face emoji here. I do give a lot. I provide a lot. I have helped thousands of people all over the world. Those things are true, but not by deleting myself.
Right. Yeah.
And I think when we are in burnout and in addiction and in what we are doing is eliminating any sort of recognition or responsibility for the fact that we are actually humans who have needs. And if we can just erase ourselves enough and portion ourselves, a little bit goes to you and a little bit goes to you and a little bit goes to you. We think we're going to live through those people, but we don't.
Right.
We just don't. So, choice. Yeah. A lot of people listening are saying, I can't quit my job. I won't be able to pay my bills. I can't take time off. I can't invest in recovery. I can't. And those are all scary, reasonable things. How do we help people manage that?
Well, I mean, I would just start the very first thing that you just said is languaging it from a place of power. Mm-hmm. I'm choosing to work this job because right now my financial security is there and it would create too much anxiety for me to do something different. But also recognize that the only thing that you're ever scared of is how you're going to feel. Like your house can burn down and that would be awful, but you would like an ant, you'd get the stuff that made it and you'd go move it somewhere else and you would do the thing. Like we think we're scared of having to live in an apartment after we get the divorce from the big house, or we think we're too, like we can't do things, but actually you're afraid of what you're, the story you're going to tell yourself, that you're starting over, that you failed, that you just lost half your whole life, or everything was meaningless behind you and you've wasted your time. It's those stories that we're afraid of. We're not actually afraid of getting our hands dirty because we're all humans. And if a tsunami washes our house away, we got to get our hands dirty. And so languaging everything you're doing from a place of power, I think is a great way to begin to see all of your choices and then to make them from a conscious decision instead of a subconscious resistance because you're afraid of your own mind and what it's going to tell you if you do end up in an apartment or have to give the nice car away and take the bus or whatever it is. Like actually you could take the bus and be happier if the story is, okay, my goal is, you know, if you have a growth mindset and a vision for the future, what is Viktor Frankl's? Somebody says pain or suffering. What is it? When pain has meaning, there is no suffering when pain has meaning. And so when you train your brain to lean into the hard thing on the front end, seeding for your future, I'm going to do the hard thing now because it's going to get me where I'm going to go in a year. Your relationship with all the things that you're afraid of that will happen changes. Because now there's a purpose and there's a goal and you're working towards something. Now you're not suffering. Now you're just in the early stages of a comeback story.
This is sort of, you know, NLP based stuff, neuro-linguistic programming and choosing the right language, et cetera. Is there a risk for people in your belief to enter into a space of spiritual bypassing by changing their language in this way.
Okay. So to me, spiritual bypassing is when you are telling yourself that this is all good and you're refusing to acknowledge the whole truth, which this sucks, this hurts, and I hate it. But I think making room for the whole truth, like I'm doing this, spiritual bypassing to me is just when you pretend that half of your emotions don't exist. You don't allow yourself to feel. You don't allow yourself to, you know, you're not wallowing in your energy, but I have huge, big emotions. And but energy itself is neutral. There is no bad or good emotion. There's just energy. Without a story, it's just a sensation in your body. So of course, there's a risk of people spiritual bypassing, but that's part of living consciously, is realizing when you're doing that, like, oh, I think I've been telling myself a story here, and that shit on my shoe actually does stink. So excuse me, I'm gonna get out of here. So it's just a learning process though. Like, you can't get it wrong. We're all human. And so I don't think that you can get it wrong. I think if you wake up and you're aware and you're constantly learning, oh, I was suppressing my truth there. Okay. All right. Now, because that feeling was still there, I'm going to let it out. And perhaps I'm going to take a different action. I'm going to turn left instead of right. So I think as a practice, spiritual bypassing is just another form of something that's going to lead you to burnout, because you've got your fingers stuck in your ears, la, 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 la. But I also think the whole truth is where you need to go. It's not all negative and it's not all positive. It's allowing all of it to exist and navigating the energy of it in the moment and not letting it jerk you around. Like, oh, this does hurt. I'm still going to do the thing. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you explained it that way. And so, Fried Fam, I want you to listen into that, because this is not about, I had a call recently, one of the office hours calls, and we were talking about not increasing your capacity so that you can stay in the bullshit, right? This is not about making yourself so resilient that you don't have to actually make the changes that need to be made in order for you to live the life that you want to live. You can regulate your nervous system, right? But we are not here to increase your capacity to maintain the bullshit. So when you are speaking to yourself, and when you change into language that is more powerful, I do this to people a lot. If you're in the Facebook group, you've seen me take somebody's sentence and say, I would rather you say it like this. You've seen me do this in action, because I do this all the time. When we are changing in these ways, we are not ignoring the truth. And if you are ignoring the truth when you do that, we're going to need you to dial back and get real again.
Yeah.
But there is that little bit of a, I think, a danger zone where people start to just say, well, if I just change the way I talk about this, then it will be fine. No, 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 no. If it's shit, it's shit, and we need to shift it. But we can either sit down and say, it's shit and somebody threw it on me and I'm stuck. Or we can say, it's shit and I have Clorox wipes and I'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to push back just a little bit.
Do it.
On that, because it's a process, and no one truth is the truth.
Ever.
I'm going through a divorce right now, and I spent 4 years, not a second wasted, doing everything I could to change the way I think, change the way I see things, acknowledge the pain. I did all the things. And then I woke up one morning and I had to say, okay, if I knew I'm going to be okay in a year with either decision, either one, stay or go, in 1 year, I'm going to be okay. What is my 2025 version of me want to be? Like, if I'm going to go through a year of suck, do I want to continue to extend effort in this, or do I want to pull the plug and say, that's it? It took me 4 years to get there, and it wasn't a second too soon. So we all have a process, and there is no one truth. Ever. There is a universe where I'm not leaving. And then there it is, but I just made that decision and moved out of the what ifs, you know, and I just moved into, okay, this is I'm just doing this now. Like the scales just tipped. Yeah. And this truth became heavier. And if I'm going to have to struggle I'd rather struggle and know that I'm going to end up not right back here in the cul-de-sac of stupidity. So I'm gonna go now. And so I think it's a process. I don't think any of us can know if we're spiritually bypassing unless we just have that as one of the questions, like, are you ignoring something here? You know?
Right.
And then you just let it percolate. You let it sit. You know, you're not late for your life. You're living it. We're recording. It's already happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, if I'm honest. And the idea that there's not one truth I'd like to keep honing in on for a moment. This is such a critical life skill to hold space for this. Like, there's an exercise that is in my first book and attached to the Resentment Journal, which is a reframing exercise. And the challenge is that you come up with four different versions of the same story that are all equally true. And then you choose the one that that feels best to you, because they're all some version of truth and all some version of maybe not exactly perfectly true, because no matter what you do, that's the end result, no matter what. So this idea that this is important for the stories you're telling yourself about what's to come in your future and what's available to you. And this is equally as important as the stories you're telling yourself about what happened to you and how you reacted to it and what it means about who you are today. And now we're back to the beginning of our conversation when you said, you know, addicts are told that they are this and once an addict, always an addict. And that is one version of the story.
And if you believe it, it's true.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are many people living wonderful lives with that story. And there are many people that are suffering. You know, there's no right or wrong. There's right. Just what works for you. And so for me, you know, just to circle back all the way around to my story, where did I get to with dropping the perfectionism?
Yeah.
Is I realized there was evidence in my life that told me I was not an all or nothing, and that I was a little bit of a less or more. And I started noticing it. Mm-hmm. And I started gaining confidence in my ability to, I'm going to be honest, take a hit off my kid's vape and hand it back.
Yeah.
Little things like that. Like there was evidence of my life that I was able to interact with addictive substances and not give that my power and like take it back. And so I shifted as a drinker. The first, you know, 2 years of my sobriety, I was like, I would never have another drink again, because I'm the type of person, like, why would you have one drink? That's dumb. That's a waste of calories. Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm doing the whole bottle. That was a story I was telling myself. And then after 2 years of sobriety, all of a sudden, when I was speaking with my brother that day, I thought, you know what? I think I would like one little tiny glass of wine. Everybody else is having it. And then I thought, I sat with that because I had a lot of fear that I was going to end up in a van down by the river drinking mouthwash. And so I really had to do that. But basically, I leaned into this idea of my chosen identity. I decided, how do I want to see myself? As a less is more person. I'm a less is more person. I am balanced and I love trying things. I can have a piece of birthday cake. Like, I think of wine or alcohol now as birthday cake. I don't eat it every day. I'm not going to eat all of it. And if I did, I'd live through it. You know, like, I just chose how I want to be. And that's who I am now. Schedule me back in 2 years and we'll see. I became a less is more person and I chose that as my identity. And it feels true today. And it'll feel, and as long as it feels true, I'm going to work with that. And then I will go on, you know, and if my truth changes and tomorrow's truth is today's bullshit, then I will adjust with that.
That is a beautiful place to start winding down. And the reason that I love this space is because our identities are something that come up a lot around here. I was a lawyer and I burnt out as a lawyer and I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. But if I'm not a lawyer, then I have to work a, you know, minimum wage job. It's like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Allowing your identity and your goals and your feelings to shift as you age and as you grow through life is and has been for me one of the most difficult skills to build. It's critical. I am still learning it. I am better at it some days than I am others. It is very hard to not attach your identity to your worth. So shifting it, once you've decided that those things are equal, shifting it becomes scary in that circumstance. But then we come back to, what is the story I'm telling myself about this person, about this identity, about what this means in my life? What would you say to someone who is listening to this right now and they're saying, and they're thinking, I don't have any privilege. I don't have any money to spend. I'm totally burnt out. I can't change my job. This is their story. What is the first unlocking of this identity, of this victim mindset that we're stuck in, of this identity that we're stuck in?
Well, where I would put that is to start looking for where you do have resources. You can pay attention, whatever you are focused on, that is true. And I am not saying that there's not truth in what you're saying, but there's always wiggle room. Okay, maybe you don't have money, but you have time. Or maybe you've got $5 and you can subscribe to somebody on Substack that is enlightening you, and you're listening to this podcast. Keeping a register, a running list in your head of the resources you do have, because as long as you are focused on what you don't have, that's all you can see. Training your brain to notice the toehold that you can go one step higher, you know, like watching Alex Honnold climb El Capitan. You know, I mean, a lot of people would say that's impossible. So filling your mind with role models and stories of people who have been in your situation and have expanded, like that's where I would start. But the longer you focus on what you don't have, the more that you're living in that truth. And I know gratitude gets so taken around for overuse. And I get that. I start with gratitude for who I am and what I'm doing for myself. That is my twist on gratitude. And then the other one is gratitude for things yet to come. I'm seeding the future. What can I do right now that will make tomorrow, next month, next year, 5 years from now, a little bit easier? I don't care if you don't have any money and any reason. There's always something you can do to move yourself in a direction without being attached to how long it's going to take you or whatever. There is no hole that is so deep you can't climb out of it. And gratitude for the other one is like debt. People who are in a lot of debt, flip that. How is that debt your gift? How is it in your life to teach you what you need? Like focusing on the external circumstance of it's just a number on paper. Like it doesn't even really exist. Go find the debt. Like it's how you feel about how you got the debt or what it means you can't do. Again, this is emotional sobriety. You're intoxicated with this idea that you're living in lack and therefore you will. So being grateful for the places that's advanced gratitude, when you can look at the things that you currently see as obstacles or problems and become grateful because they are your teacher in terms of how to move forward one broken fingernail at a time. That's how this is done. This isn't easy. This is broken fingernail, one broken fingernail at a time. And that is the same at all levels. Of course, I mean, I get it. There are truly traumatic circumstances,
of course.
But for the most part, you can crawl out of the hole no matter how deep it is. You just have to be willing to start. You can't say, well, my hole's 100 feet deep and hers was only 20, which means this isn't fair. Because really, a lot of it's also about fair. Like somebody has something more than me, so this isn't fair. That's a story. If you want to keep it, you can.
I've thought a lot about fairness because it's so related to resentment, which is a huge topic of mine, and burnout in general. There's no such thing as fair. We're all trying for it all the time, but there's no such thing as fair. There's no such thing as fair. it's unfair that some people have certain lips if we want to go that far, you know, like it just that are popular right now. I mean, come on, we could go on forever and ever. And if you are listening to this, then I would like for you to stop and recognize that this is a resource that is being created for you, provided for you at no cost to you. And Colleen also has a podcast that is created for you, right? It's not about the alcohol. And Colleen, you also have a masterclass that people can join. What's okay. the Accelerated Recovery Masterclass about?
So I have a masterclass that basically, if you are drinking 10 or more drinks per week, and you know life would be better, and you want to learn how to pursue happiness and mental health instead of sobriety, I have an accelerated recovery process for high achieving. I understand this is my mindset, and I'm going to address this at the mindset level. So I have a free 1-hour masterclass. And I will tell you, I also just released a secret podcast. Ooh. So if you listen to my podcast, it's the secret podcast is a free audio course. You talk about resources. This is an amazing short form Foundations of Emotional Sobriety. Mm-hmm. And so if you listen to my podcast, I always have it in my show notes, and you can learn how to, the mindset tools that you and I are talking about just quickly in 8 to 10 minutes at a time. You take it to one of your stories and you work through it. So those are both resources.
I love that so much, Colleen. Thank you for the realness and the laughter and the mindset shifts and all of the things. I'm so grateful to you. I can't wait to send people your way, and may this episode reach every set of ears and hearts that it needs to reach in order to help at least one more person move forward in their journeys.
Thank you, Kate. It's been wonderful.
All right, Fried Fam, that wraps up another episode of Fried, the Burnout Podcast. If you love this episode and you know about 14 people that need to hear it right now, please send it to them so that they can listen and get the same benefit as you. If you would love to share it on Instagram, you can tag me at Kate Donovan Speaks, or on LinkedIn, and you can hashtag Fried, the Burnout Podcast. See you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.